all, I'd like to thank organizers for inviting me to give this tutorial lecture about Laplacian transport over Dirichlet interfaces. And after Bernard's nice and general introduction to the physics and applications of this phenomena, I can focus on some mathematical details of Laplacian transport. So let me resume the mathematical problem which was discussed before the lunch. So it's a very classical problem. We have a domain with the Laplace equation inside. We suppose that the boundary is split in two parts. One is called source, and another is called working surface. And on the source, we put Dirichlet boundary condition, uniform one. And on the working surface, we put what is called Fourier or Robin or mixed or relaxing, there's many, many names, radiation boundary condition. Where, in fact, the most important thing is that the normal derivative of the solution is proportional to the solution on the boundary. And the proportionality coefficient, lambda, is homogeneous to the length. And as Bernard explained, it's the main characteristic length of the problem, physical length, which contains all transport properties. In particular, for diffusion, it's the ratio between the diffusion coefficient in the bulk and the permeability, so the transport coefficient through the surface. Well, that's from probabilistic point of view, we can imagine that there is some species living here and distributed uniformly, and they diffuse in the bulk. And when they arrive on the boundary, they hit the boundary, either it can be transferred or absorbed by the boundary with some probability, and this is the Dirichlet part which is responsible for, or it can be reflected and continue diffusion in the bulk. And for this part, this is the Neumann part which is responsible for. And here we have just a balance between absorption and reflection, and the balance is governed or controlled by this parameter lambda. So we have only one physical parameter, and all the rest is a mathematical problem. Well, this problem is very classical, of course. What is not so classical is the fact that we consider a regular interface. And just to show you that an irregular interface may introduce some new features to this transport phenomena, let us consider two limiting cases. First, when lambda is very small, for example, even equal to zero. In this case, there is no this part, it's just Dirichlet boundary condition, and the surface is perfectly absorbing. So each particle arriving onto the boundary is immediately absorbed. In this case, it's clear that, in this case, there is already some Laplacian screening effect. That means that it's very difficult for a particle to arrive into deep regions of the boundary, because when it's moving here, it is very likely it will be observed on the part which is most accessible, most exposed to the source. And it's very difficult to go into the deep years. This Laplacian screening results, in fact, that the surface works very inhomogeneously. There are some regions which work hardly, they transfer a lot of particles, and there are some regions which not transferring at all. But like in humans, some work a lot, other one doesn't work at all. So another case, limiting case, that when lambda is going to infinity, very large. In this case, we can say that there is no Dirichlet part, so the surface almost reflecting. It means that the particle arrives onto the boundary, it is reflected, diffused in the bulk, it's reflected many, many times, and finally, after a huge number of reflections, it is absorbed or penetrate into the boundary. This would be the model of French bureaucracy, when you have to do something, you are reflected many times before arriving to a good point in a good term. So, in this case, the surface works uniformly, because it really doesn't matter if it's the part is exposed close to the source or not, because you have to travel a long way and finally absorbed more or less everywhere. And well, you have two different regimes, and you may expect that changing lambda, you would have some interesting behavior, in particular in intermediate case. And you will see that is the case. And in particular, Bernard already showed that for some region of lambda, one may have some fractal-like behavior for some class of fractal of boundaries. So, yes?
What is the physical situation where
for example, in our lives, it's the alveolar membrane is working thermi absorbing. It's thermi absorbing, thermi reflecting. It means that to transfer an oxygen molecule, it takes some time. It's not an immediate process. And that means that the particle arrives onto the alveolar membrane. And, well, I would say simplified way, if it's occupied by another molecule, by previous molecule, the arriving particle will be reflected and it will continue the motion. Is it clear? I mean, suppose that here, at each point of the surface, there is something which would transfer your molecule through the boundary. But the transfer process is not immediate. So, I mean, you may arrive here and it may be occupied. So, for example, the door is closed. Then you have to continue your travel and you come back to visit other doors, and finally one of them is open and you can go through. Or it may be the case for electrodes, or it may be in catalytic, in heterogeneous catalysis. Well, it's not the same mechanism, but you can imagine that, again, when you have something which is not immediate, so not immediate transport, not immediate reaction, in this case, particle can arrive and be transferred or be reflected and continue motion. Well, after that, you can construct some limiting cases when it's perfectly absorbing or perfectly reflecting.
So basically, I was just thinking in terms of making a smallest from the system, and in that case, I'll just keep the particle at a little state, and when it goes beyond the boundary, it will be either reflected or absorbed.
Yes, with some probability. With some given probability, and this probability is related first to this parameter lambda, to the length.
So that's what you tune manually.
Right? Yes, you can tune this, but it depends. For example, in our length, you cannot tune it. It's given by the diffusion coefficient and permeability. But yes, in some cases, for example, in electrochemistry, you can tune it. So now, the main question of my talk today would be, how does geometrical irregularity influence the transport properties of the system? And at first thought, you may imagine that, okay, what you can do to answer this question, you can solve this problem numerically. Of course, there is no analytical solution. You can write formal solution in terms of Green function and so on. But you cannot, for example, calculate the total flux for a given geometry. So you have to do numerics. And you can think in this way. So you can solve for a given geometry, you can solve the problem numerically. And then calculate, for example, the total flux, in the case of respiration, the total flux of oxygen passing through the lungs, going to the blood. So as a function of lambda. But, well, you can do it for one given geometry, you can do it for the second one, third one, etc. So what you will get, you will have collection of data, so the dependence of the total flux as a function of lambda for different geometries. But it's still not an answer to this question. You don't know what is the relevant information about the geometry which is responsible for such transport mechanism and transport properties of the system. And in fact, if you would like to apply this solution for some particular problem, you cannot, in fact, the problem is that for particular practical applications, you do not know the exact geometry. For example, there is a lot of studies of our lengths, of the asinus, but what you can get is essentially some characteristic scales, some connectivity properties, something like that, but you never have an exact geometry here. So the just simple numerical solution of the problem doesn't work. So you have to find the relevant information about the geometry, some fingerprints of the geometry which are responsible for the transport properties of the system. So to do so, we developed a theoretical approach. Well, I will present the mathematical part on the blackboard. So I can animate here. So in my talk, there will be two parts. The first one is this theoretical approach, which, as you will see, is quite simple. And the second one is the application of the numerical approach to some class of random of regular curves, which are von Koch curves. So I will start with the first part. So let me redraw this picture. So So we have some confined domain. It may be in 2D or 3D or high dimensions. And well, for simplicity reasons, suppose that the boundary is split into two disjoint parts. So we have some part which we call source here, and there is some working surface which is inside. So this is our domain omega. So here you can imagine that this is for example a catalyst germ, as Bernard showed the picture. So it's solid part and there is nothing happens here. So our domain, diffusion domain, is here. And so we put the problem, so we have concentration fixed on the source, uniform concentration. We have the Laplace equation inside the domain, and we have mixed boundary condition on the boundary, on the working surface. And one of the quantities which we are looking for is the total flux, again, in physiology, it's very important characteristics, as a function of lambda. So this is the formulation in terms of partial differential equations. And the idea is just to find another reformulation of the same problem, but in a way to reveal the fingerprints of the geometry. So we, in fact, proposed two another formulations. One of them, which is based on probability theory and uses the partially reflected Brownian motion. In fact, this part Bernard showed, if you remember, some random works going from an electrode and reflecting several times. Well, this would be the continuous version of this picture, but I will not speak today about this part. I will speak about another presentation as spectral analysis with the help of so-called Dirichlet-Neumann operator. So let me give the definition of this object. So I have the same domain, more or less. But we consider a little bit different problem for the moment. We consider the problem where the source has zero concentration. So here the Dirichlet boundary condition, zero. Of course, Laplace equation. And on the working surface, we put again Dirichlet boundary condition with some function f, which is distributed over the boundary. So, of course, I have to say that we have to specify what is the domain, so it should be quite a smooth domain to solve the problem, but it's not, in fact, a big restriction for this problem. So we can solve this problem. So we can find the solution of this problem suppose it exists. So we have good boundary and good function f here. And in this case, we can define a new function on the boundary, which is just the normal derivative of the solution restricted to the boundary. So starting from one given distribution on the boundary, we obtain another distribution on the boundary. And we can say that this operation is realized by some operator. And fortunately for us, physicists, this operator exists. It's a well-known operator, which is called Dirichlet-Neumann operator. So there is a lot of properties of this operator. I will just mention one, which is the most important for our studies. Self-adjoint operator with a positive and discrete spectrum.
What's the scalar product with respect to self-adjoint?
Well, it's I would say it's it should be the space of squares, square integral function A2 of the boundary. Or maybe you have to introduce, all depends, of course, how you define this function. Because to get the solution of the problem, you have to restrict the function to some class. And, it should be H1 solid space on the boundary. So it's a discrete spectrum. Given that the boundary is bounded. Yeah. or bound. So this is a general property, and well, the first one and the second one, which is very important, that this operator is completely independent of physics. It's purely geometrical operator. So there's only this domain, and for this domain, for given domain, one can construct this operator. So it doesn't know about any physics, and about any reaction and something like that. So it's purely geometric. Okay, so
to have some, just to get some intuition about this, suppose you take this what you call source and move it out.
Yes.
How does the operator change, roughly speaking?
Well, I also just give an example. Just first to give an intuitive feeling of what is the operator, this operator is. Suppose here you put some particles with a given distribution f, and then you let this particle diffuse in the bulk. And then what you are looking for is how this particle comes back to the boundary. And to, this distribution of fluxes coming back is given exactly by the function J and application of the security of the function F.
I want to ask about sales adjoinments.
Sorry, can you speak louder?
About the sales adjoinments, because usually you need a normal operator from 8.5 to 8-1/2.
Okay.
So it's not from the same space. What do you mean by sales?
Okay. Well, I agree that if you would like to write the rigorous description of this problem, you may have you have to define the starting space and the image space. But suppose that here, if you have, for example, a continuous function or even well-defined, many times differentiable functions. In this case, I think it should work. I mean, this operator would be, you have to define these spaces properly, I agree. But then if you consider just restriction of functions, for example, like continuous or differentiable functions here, then you can apply and use this property. I'm coming back here. So just to give an example. Let us consider a simple case. It's two circles. So in this case, you have the function on the boundary is just a function of the angle, and for a given function here, you have you can decompose it in Fourier series. Can you see it? Okay. So, and you can write the solution of the problem in this domain, in this ring. Oh, I'm sorry, I will give an example here. So, you have function here, which you can decompose into Fourier series. And then you can solve the problem in this domain. Well, it would be just Fourier series with powers of the radial component, and finally, it's easy to show that the Fourier harmonics are the eigenfunctions of the Dirichlet-Neumann operator in this case. And you have eigenvalues here, and in fact, you can even calculate these eigenvalues. Well, it would be, I wouldn't write an exact expression, but in the limits, for example, when here it's 1 and here it's radius r, when radius goes to infinity, it's going just to modulus of n. So this is, for example, what happens. So it's exactly the same, well, just by the symmetry, it's exactly the same eigenfunction, so they do not change, but the eigenvalues goes rapidly to this limiting value. Well, roughly speaking, you can say that what is the operator m? It's something that represents a normal derivative. Because you start from a function f, and the restriction of the solution to this domain, Dirichlet condition, and then you obtain something which is a normal derivative of the solution. Okay, now let me apply this operator to study our problem. Now, here there is several difficulties. First of all, we have to change the boundary condition on the source. Well, that's the most simple part. We consider this change. this case the gradient is taken off the boundary, so we have a normal derivative, and here is the Fisher coefficient. And we have, using this relation, du, it will be n. So in fact, to calculate the total flux, what we need is the normal derivative of the solution of this problem. And now how to use this operator to solve the problem? Well, it's a very simple trick, but it's the heart of the approach. Let us, for the moment, let us do this the following. Let's introduce function f here. So suppose that we solve this problem, that we know the solution. Let us define function f on the boundary, which is the restriction of the solution. Then we can forget about this condition and write that on the boundary, well, write the same thing in different way. Now, again, since the solution of this problem is unique, it's the same, either apply this condition or apply this condition. And in this case, it's exactly the case I wrote here. So you can use the Dirichlet Neumann operator. So you can write that the normal derivative of the solution is the application of the operator M to the restriction of to the boundary. So now we can forget about this one, and we can come back here. So we can use this relation. So this is very simple but important point, because a priori it's not clear whether we can apply this operator or not, but in fact this operator is defined, it depends only on the domain, so it's defined by the domain, and then we can use it for the same domain, we can use it whatever the boundary condition here is.
So that boundary condition, u plus lambda du dn, applies on the boundary.
Exactly.
So u restricted to the boundary is that function that you try to apply to m in the
yes.
box. But it's much simpler related to du by the n by that boundary condition. So the operator is equal to multiplication by lambda in this case?
No.
So compare that thing, u plus lambda du dn equals 1, m
okay.
box.
Yes.
It looks like it's related, both equations relate the same things.
Well, here you have 1.
Yeah, that's okay.
Actually, I will use this fact. Yeah, it's very simple. I'm not pretending to invent something very complicated.
No, but is it correct that u du dn is equal to u minus 1 divided by lambda?
Wait.
One minus u divided by lambda, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So this is the action of m on u, right? Is it as trivial as that?
No, that's not as trivial as that, because here, this operator, again, it doesn't know about physics. It doesn't know about lambda here. Lambda is a physical parameter which we can change as we want. This operator is just given by the geometry. It happens, I agree that it happens, that these two conditions can be, well, just I will show you. I will use exactly what you are talking about. But you cannot say, well, you cannot say this operator, which doesn't know about lambda, is defined through the lambda. I'm not. Is it clear enough? Let me show how it works, and then probably we'll come back to this point. Okay. Now, if we assume, well, not assume, it's true. So, let's substitute this condition here. So we have, I plus exactly what you said, application to the restriction of the function u equal to 1. So, and here is the identity operator. So I just wrote the same equation, substituting this definition. So it means that the solution of this problem, of the original problem, the restriction of the solution of the original problem satisfies this relation. And since the operator M is has a discrete positive spectrum and lambda is a positive number, we can invert this relation and we can retrieve the restriction of the solution onto the boundary as the application of the inverse of the ratio like that with constants. Now, I'm not sure if it's a response to your question, but it works. Okay, so this is one of the important relations. flux density. So again, here instead of writing the normal derivative, we can apply the greater M to this function, and this function is given here. Then we can, let us take particular case lambda equal to zero. In this case, there is no this part, so we have just dm1. And we can commutate these two operators, so we can write lambda m minus 1 applied to f0. Now we can calculate the total flux. Here this relation can be seen as the scalar product between the flux density and the unit function in the space of square integrable functions on the boundary. So the total flux can be written as this density multiplied by 1. Well, I can put the density from this relation. Now, again, using that this self-adjoint operator, we can apply it to the constant. Then, well, again, since this operator has a good spectral properties, we can use the usual trick, as we can write four numbers, but we can apply for the operators here. We can just rewrite this inverse operator in this form. So we get this minus lambda phi 0. Sure. which I call
just simply the best set of harmonic measures.
Exactly. Well, I don't know if it's for everyone is obvious, but it's true. I mean, again, for lambda equal to zero, we have, for example, from the original problem, c equal to one, and for lambda equal to zero, c equal to zero here. So, and we're looking for the phi zero, the density of fluxes coming onto the boundary. So it's exactly, well, it's not exactly the harmonic measure density, but it's proportional to the harmonic measure density. And when we normalize it by the total flux, what we got is the normalization that the flux, the integral over the boundary is equal to 1. So this quantity is nothing else than the harmonic measure density. And again, it's purely geometrical characteristics. There is no physics at all. It depends only on the geometry. And last step, last formula I will write on the blackboard is that since the Fisher Perlman operator is self-adjoint, we can use the we can introduce eigenfunctions and eigenvalues of this operator, as I did for that example. But we can do it in general, and we can decompose this scalar product onto the basis of these eigenvalues. So what we finally obtain is the impedance decomposition over all eigenmodes, and here we will have phi zero t where alpha, where alpha star phi zero t divided by 1 plus lambda m alpha. And this part we will call f alpha. So again, from in this relation, this is a physical quantity which can be measured. There are two physical parameters, lambda, d, and lambda again here. And there are two geometrical parameters, mu alpha and f alpha. So mu alpha is the eigenvalues of the Fisher Perlman operator, and f alpha is the square of the decomposition of the harmonic measure density onto the eigenfunctions of the Fisher Perlman operator. Again, it's purely geometrical quantity.
So it's again back to the question about the space. I thought was the space a real function.
Sorry?
The space on which M acted was the space of real functions. Is it not the case?
Yes.
Why do you need complex conjugation?
Well, it's usual. Gustav, sorry.
Huh?
It does?
Well, I'm not using it, but it's usually when you write some. Yes, you're right, so sorry. So in fact, my statement and the issue of the theoretical part is that this quantity are the fingerprints of the geometry. So if you have a given geometry, you can calculate, you can construct the Dirichlet Perlman operator, and you can determine these quantities. If you are very good experimentalists, and you can measure the impedance with infinite precision, absolutely accurately, then you can retrieve these quantities from this form. You can, well, it's a question how to do it, but okay, you can do it essentially inverse Laplace transformation you can use. But of course, after that, in practice, it's a question of noise and more difficult. So, but essentially, the set of these two quantities is the fingerprints of the geometry for the Laplacian transport phenomenon we consider. So now, this is a general approach, but again, it's I suppose for a physicist, I suppose that the boundary is quite nice and everything works well. Well, I guess that you can see that the idea is very simple. It's just a unicode string, essentially. So this approach should work whenever the Dirichlet Perlman operator exists and whenever you can impose this condition, because if you have very rough boundary, very fractal one, well, it's a problem how to define this condition, because you can define either Dirichlet or Neumann condition for very rough boundaries, but the combination of two is more complicated, as far as I know. Yes?
So the goal is to use experiments to determine what is Z lambda, and then from Z lambda, we construct the geometry, right?
Well, it would be final, ultimate goal, but it's difficult, experimentally. don't know the geometry, but you have, like, for example, you have an electrode, metallic electrode, and in most metallic electrodes there is micro roughness, and you don't know the geometry. Well, you can look at microscope and so on, but if you have no microscope, what you can do in principle, you can put it into electrolyte, measure this quantity, and then extract these parameters. It doesn't tell you what the geometry is, and this is an open mathematical problem. Again, what Bernard it's an open problem. No, suppose that we know this quantity, can we retrieve the geometry? Or to which extent can we retrieve?
It's known that you cannot hear the shape of a drum.
Yeah, I know. But the question
is,
to which extent can we hear it? That's the crucial point for imaging, for all experimental problems. It's a general inverse problem, which is, well, we know that we cannot be perfect, but to which extent can we do something? Is it okay? Well, now I'm coming back to the projector, and I'll show you the application of this approach to just as an illustration of these results, but you will see that there are many interesting features, and in particular you will see why these quantities mu alpha phi alpha are useful and how they can be applied. So we have this geometry. So it's, for example, we consider the Koch curve. Can obtain very easily. You take the generator, which is composed of five linear segments, and at each iteration you replace one segment by the whole geometry. Well, this is the second generation, third generation, fourth generation, etc. Well, you can see that the length of this curve increases with iterations, and in the limit you will have a very irregular curve of formally infinite lengths, and you can show that the fractal dimension of this curve is log 5 over log 3. So, well, for this geometry, of course, we cannot calculate, we cannot obtain operator analytically, we have to do numerical simulations. Well, I'm not presenting the ideas, but we use the kind of boundary element method, which is in fact related to the Brownian self-transport operator Bernard presented in his talk. So, what, for a given geometry, we can numerically calculate the construct Dirichlet norm operator and calculate the eigenspectrum. So, let us start with the simple case. Well, a little bit more complicated than the circle. So here you have just one pore, like that, and you have infinity of eigenmodes. This is just the beginning of the spectrum. And well, you have many, many modes, and you have this relation. In principle, for computational purpose, if you need to calculate all eigenmodes, just one. Well, this relation, it's not better than the original description, because if you need to calculate all eigenmodes, it's easier to solve this the original problem immediately. Yes?
So, where is the boundary where C is equal to 1?
Sorry?
Where is the boundary where C is equal to 1?
C? Ah, okay. Sorry. Thank you for this point. Well, in fact, I wanted to skip this part, but as you asked, well, in fact, okay. So this is our boundary. Then we put, then we put some source here. But well, you cannot. Yeah, after that, there is some it's numerical point. But you have to put something here. The principle, because you cannot allow particle diffuse everywhere, so you have to restrain their motion. And you can either put, for example, a Neumann boundary condition here. Or what you can do, and what physicists always do when they have a problem, they try to avoid the problem. So we have two boundaries. We don't know what to do with them. Just let's glue them together. In this case, we have no boundary and we have no problem. So in fact, simulation I will show you given not on a plane but on a cylinder. Honest, so it's something like that, but cylinder with some part like that. So this bottom, which is very irregular. So, well, this bottom is okay, but the previous one, it's quite tough. So here the source is just circle. Here is the boundary, and the particle diffused on the cylinder. And in fact, even yeah, even worse, we put source on infinity. So in fact, it's not even this bounded, it's a simple bounded cylinder, but it's semi-infinite cylinder. But in fact, we checked that this technical change from plane to cylinder, it doesn't change the results. So you can, the results for this cylinder, and when you put, for example, normal boundary condition here, you will have more or less the same thing. And for this source at infinity, it's just to avoid another parameter, because in principle, we have a distance between the source and the boundary, and of course, all will depend on the distance. And again, since we are looking for the behavior on the boundary, we would like to avoid well, another parameter to simplify the problem. But again, you can calculate for a given distance, it's not a deal. So, okay, so for this geometry, you have infinity of eigenmodes, and but good point that all eigenmode is weighted by the spectral component. And now, if I plot all eigenmodes but weighted by this factor, what we obtain, well, it was surprising even for us, that in fact, among infinity of eigenmodes, you have only two eigenmodes which contribute to the impedance. Well, you can see here there is some other smaller contribution, but from physical point of view, they are completely negligible with respect to this one.
So what happened within the previous equation?
Just here, all eigenmodes have the same weight.
No, the boundary changed?
No, no, nothing changed. It's so the same spectrum, everything is the same. Just here, I plotted the eigenvalues. Here, the position of eigenvalues, and here is the same weight. And oh, sorry. And in the new graph, it's the same positions, but the weight are f alpha. So it just represents which eigenmode are in fact contributing. And you can see that for this geometry, there is only two eigenmodes which contribute. It means that in this infinite sum, there is only two terms which contribute. And the fingerprints of the geometry of this geometry are four numbers, four real numbers, mu0, mu1, f0, f1, and we know how to calculate them. And from a physical point of view, it's really important because this relation, I would call it geometrical again. There is no physics here. It's just geometrical representation using the Dirichlet phenomenon operator. Yes?
So what are the parameters for if I change the cock? If I change the cock curve a little, can I change the parameters a little? What are the
if you change this, the geometry, you mean?
Yeah, so can I perturb it, perturb the f0, f1?
Of course. Well, if you change the geometry, you will change f0, f1. And well, I will show you what happens for higher order generation of the same generator. But if you change the generation, well, you will change the value, these values, yes.
Can you interpret how they relate to the geometry?
That's not so easy. Well, we will come. Well, I give some qualitative interpretations, but in fact the problem is open. So this is the reason why I'm here, and I'm trying to present these results to you, probably in hope that you will solve it. So, to explain why it's happened, because again, we had infinity of eigenmodes, and only two of them contribute. So we can see, of course, on the spectral components, and the spectral components is the scalar product between the harmonic measure density and eigenfunctions. So let me show, this is the case of a plane surface, so just one linear segment, the simple one, and this is the first generation. On the top is the lowest eigenvector, and it's constant for all cases, it's a general property. And on the bottom is the harmonic measure density. So for a flat boundary, the harmonic measure is uniform, it's clear, and when we will take scalar product and normalize it in a appropriate way, we obtain contribution 1. Here, the same constant eigenvalue, eigenfunction, sorry, and but the harmonic measure density is not uniform because here you have it's much more easier to access to these corners, to these two corners, and you have two peaks here, and it's more difficult to access these two corners, and you have minima here. But still, when you take the scalar product with the constant, it's just a normalization of the harmonic measure density, and you will get the same contribution 1. So it's general property for the lowest eigenmode. For any geometry, it would be like that. Then, let me take the first eigenfunction. Well, for a flat surface, it's again Fourier harmonics, like for a circle. It's clear that product of Fourier harmonics with the constant is always zero, so all other components will be zero in this case. But what happens for the third generation? Well, the first eigenfunction. Oh.
2 minute one.
Okay. The first eigenfunction is looks like this one, but the harmonic measure doesn't. So in fact, what happens that here you have positive part and negative part, and the harmonic measure here dumps this negative part. So what you will have only the positive part here, and you have non-trivial contribution. That is sharp sharp difference with respect to the case for a flat surface. If we go to other eigenfunctions here, well, in this case the contribution is zero because it's anti-symmetric and this is symmetric. Next one the same. First one, this is symmetric and this is symmetric. Here again, this part is dumped, so it's not interesting. But what happens here? The oscillation becomes quite rapid already. That means that on the length scale of this geometry of this harmonic measure, you have already negative and positive contribution. And as a result, the total contribution is not zero, but it's very small. So this is the reason why there is no other contributions. And you can see for higher order eigenfunctions similar behavior. Okay, so the main result, and I will probably stop here. Now let me show the result, what happens for higher order generation. So this is the same result, but on logarithmic scale. And again, since the source is in infinity, the eigenfunction, eigenvalue mu zero is equal to zero. In principle, it should be at minus infinity, but you couldn't see it, so I put it here. So there is a break of scale here. So now the second generation, third generation, fourth generation. Well, this is the main numerical result I would like to present, and many remarks, I hope. First, well, it's amazing that for this fourth generation, which from physical point of view is very complex geometry, you have only five contributing peaks. Well, you can say that you can see here some contributing peaks which are of the same height than this one, but they are very close to this one, so well, after that you can fuse them together. Well, it's other discussion, but essentially there is five contribution for this very irregular geometry. Another observation, then here for this geometry you have only one characteristic scale. It's the length of this pore, and you have one peak. When you go to the next generation, generation two, you create a new scale on the length 1/9, and you can see a new peak here. And what is important that, for example, this big length scale is present for all other generations. So it can be recognized here, it can be recognized here, here, and so on. And we can see this peak, which is almost on the same position for all these curves. Similarly, for the new created irregularity on scale 1/9, you can see this peak, and it's present for other generations. So you can see this peak, and the same for other peaks. And this gives an as a feeling to state a hypothesis or conjecture that the position of contributing eigenmodes are related to the characteristic length scale of the problem. So this one is related to this scale, this one is related to smaller scale, etc. And of course we have the peak here, which is related to the distance between the source and the interface. And here the source is infinity, so M0 is equal to zero. And just a support to this hypothesis that in fact on logarithmic scale this the positions of these peaks are looks like equidistant, and so it means that when you pass from one peak to another you have to multiply by some number, and in fact this number is 5. It's not coincidence, it's number of segments, and it's the harmonic ratio of the perimeter. And it's less obvious from this graph, but you can check that the heights of these peaks are also multiplicative, and to obtain to go from one peak to another, you multiply by a factor of 5/3, and again, 3 is not by coincidence. So, well, let me again give transparency. If we suppose now, well, we check it for four third generations. Let us suppose that this work, this relations hold for higher order generations. We have no proof for this, it's just empirical observation. So, but if it's true, what we can do, we can calculate the model impedance, the model linear response, by very simple formula. There's only five terms, and we now approximate these coefficients now. And we can compare this model impedance with the numerical one, which was calculated very accurately and so on. And you can see that over five-fold of magnitude of lambda, the difference is less than 10%. And it's bounded here, it's not the divergence, it can be shown. So now, if we believe that it's true, that we can apply this technique for any generation. Well, I'm modest, I use generation 10, but it could be 1,000 or million, generation million. It never could be accessed by numerical simulation. But by this model, it can be done, and you can observe this behavior. So you can study the behavior of the impedance, and you can observe different regimes for small lambda, for large lambda, and you can observe fractal regime. And here, beta is, in fact, very close to the inverse of the fractal dimension, what Bernard showed you last time in his talk. So this exponent beta in this power law is very close to 1 over f. Well, I'm sort of out of time, so just like to finish by giving some references. Well, there is, for example, you can study such electrodes. Well, many interesting things. sorry. Okay. So just some references. Well, first, I encourage you to read the review paper by Bernard to give an introduction to this subject and some historical overview here. Then I would mention three papers. Well, this approach was developed by Marcel Filoni, Bernard Sapovaglia, and me. So three papers which I will call preliminary to what I presented, because here there is a formulation of the problem, discrete approach to the problem, and well, some preliminary properties of the operators. The main results I presented here are given in these two papers. And another approach, which I didn't present, which is related to partial effective Brownian motion, is given in this paper. So I'm here, if you're interested, I would be very pleased to discuss this subject. And if you like, I can send you references. Thank you very much for your attention.